Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This is Andy Crestedina, author of Content Chemistry, the illustrated handbook for content marketing. And you are listening to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails.
Hello and welcome to this hopefully short-lived series that will be airing in addition to the weekly Marketing Book podcast interviews. I'm your host, Douglas Burdett, and my goal during this unusual time is to reconnect you with past guests on the Marketing Book podcast, share some ideas and inspiration, and maybe a much-needed laugh or two. I've interviewed over 200 authors on the show, and my plan is to continue this series until I either run out of authors or quarantine, whichever comes first. A word of warning, the host and guest may very likely be drinking cocktails during these conversations. I mean, come on. They are recorded during the cocktail hour. To find the show notes for each episode with pictures of each guest and links mentioned in their conversation, visit marketingbookcocktails.com. Marketingbookcocktails.com. See what I did there? And if you'd like to join the conversation, email a voice recording to me at douglas@salesartillery.com, and I'll try to include it in a future episode. I'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat. Andy Crestedina, welcome to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. What is going on in your quarantine world?
Oh, it's upside down all around me. But for me, I'm in this little weird eye of the storm because there's 40 of us. I'm the only one who comes into the office still. I check the mail. I water the plants. So I'm a bit less disrupted than a lot of the people around me. But the good news, everyone around me is healthy, and I feel very lucky that the family's all good.
Oh, that's good. That's good. And when did everyone clear out of the office? About 2 months ago?
Yeah. You know, it's like the Shawshank Redemption. I have a piece of chalk, and I mark on the wall the number of days it's been. Hold on. Let me turn around and see. 10, 20, 30, 50. This is my 50th day today alone in the office. So how many weeks is that? 50 business days. That's 10 weeks.
Oh, so you've been coming in every day.
I work here. I don't really have a desk at home. I'm not really set up at home. This is just a better setup. Bandwidth, light, mic, computer, second screen, desk, chair, the whole thing. So, okay. And it's only 3 blocks from home. So I still come.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you're not having to catch mass transit or anything like that. Well, that's good. Well, Before we go much further, I need to make sure the listeners know who you are. So you were on episode 85. You were an early supporter of the Marketing Book podcast. I appreciate that. Today I published episode 281. Now, you were on back in August of 2016, and I introduced you then. So this time, I want you to introduce yourself and tell listeners who are new to the Marketing Book podcast who you are and what you do.
I am best known as the co-founder of Orbit Media, which is a web design and development firm here in Chicago. And I have for many years been one of those of us who does a lot of teaching. I do a lot of writing. I contribute to things. I wrote the book we just mentioned. I speak at a lot of conferences. So I'm a content strategist. The topics that I'm most often invited to talk about are search optimization and analytics, content strategy, influencer marketing, conversion optimization. Those are my main areas of expertise. But Orbit is mostly relevant local to Chicago. And it's a web design company. There's 40 of us, and we build 50 to 60 sites a year. And so the focus of my career for the last 20 years has been on website planning, but I'm a teacher just like you.
And if those websites are anything like orbitmedia.com, they're nice websites. But before we get into that, there's a little bit more people need to know about Andy Crestedina. Okay, so I've met you a couple times since I got to interview you. I met you in Boston at the Marketing Profs event and Content mm-hmm. Marketing World where you spoke. And boy, you know, is there a video of that talk you gave? That was about 2 years ago. You later did a webinar of it. That was phenomenal. And I was just thinking about that the other day.
There must be. I think they have recently, during COVID, I think they kind of went inside out like a lot of companies did and published or made public a lot of that content. So the Content Marketing Institute's YouTube channel may have the full recordings of lots of those presentations. Okay. And as you browse through, even if it looks like it's, you know, 2 years old, if it's a topic like search or analytics, it's probably all still highly relevant.
Well, I would agree. And I'll see if I can find it included on your episode show notes at marketingbookcocktails.com. And that talk was phenomenal. It was completely packed in, it was a pretty big room. And then afterwards, you did it. You did a webinar for that talk. You did a webinar of that talk for, I can't recall who, a software company maybe. And I had my content director watch it and I watched it again. It was really, really helpful, but it's like so many things that are on your website. But you also have a son who's going to Yale, right?
He has the Yale dog, which you are the most, you're just, I love you, Douglas. You got, you right. are considerate and thoughtful and just a kind, generous person. Yes. So we talked about my boy, Eli, right after he was born. He's now four.
He's already got early acceptance to Yale. And I should explain that Eli is, Eli was the first name of Mr. Yale, mm-hmm. who endowed Yale. And so that's the name of the dog, the mascot. Eli Yale. So when you told me your son's name was Eli, that's when I said, oh, that's the Yale mascot. I don't think you knew that. So then I started saying things. And as a matter of fact, Andy Crestedina, I was up on the third floor of our house because, you know, now that I'm quarantined at the house, mm-hmm. I'm starting to throw stuff out and clean up. What did mm-hmm. I find? A little Yale fleece that my son had worn when he was little. He's now 25. I got to clean it first, but that's heading your way. Even if it's a little big, he can grow into it.
The little dog is still with him. We have it in his room.
Oh, it's, good.
So the listeners, here's a little word picture. It's a bulldog, a tiny stuffed animal bulldog. Well, not tiny, it's small, but and it's wearing a Yale sweater. It's just charming. It's a gray bulldog with a purple sweater, right? It adorable.
So that's and then your daughter Ada, how old is she?
She's two.
Two.
Yep.
Okay. Well, good. The other thing I wanted to mention that a lot of people may not realize is that you studied like Asian language at University of Iowa. And then I saw that you went to peak, you studied in China as well.
Yeah. I was one of those sort of like a lack of strong direction college students. This was the early 90s. So there was no digital anything. I had no idea what I wanted to do. When I started college, there wasn't an email. You know, no one had an email address and computers were in a lab. Remember the computer lab?
Yes.
Like a place you went.
I can remember
to go,
right? using it. Yeah.
Yeah. You wait in line to use the computers at the computer lab and you mm-hmm. leave with your term paper on a floppy disk. Mm-hmm.
What was that term you just used?
Floppy disk. Remember this? Yeah. And so I changed majors a bunch and in the end, and, somewhere during my second year, was dared by a friend to take a Mandarin class with him. We took it together. He dropped out after the first year, but I ended up doing 4 years of Mandarin, which gets you a degree. After that, really didn't feel that comfortable yet in the language, so found a program that took me to China for another semester at Peking University and sort of finished learning when I was there and loved it and was quite good at Chinese at that time. Not long after that, and this is like 1997 now, so China was about to explode. I don't have regrets, you know, being, you know, a white guy fluent in Mandarin leaving China in 97. I'm sure life would have been interesting had I stayed, but I wanted to live back in Chicago. And life in China, I think, would be exciting, but kind of a challenge in lots of other ways. So I haven't spoken Chinese. I don't regularly speak it. I can have a conversation now if someone wanted to. But yeah, that was a degree. And Iowa, it turns out, was not a bad place to learn Chinese.
Interesting. And are you still in touch with any folks back in China?
You know, it's really cool that the web has makes us all so close. So, yeah, there was a friend who just a couple of months ago. Well, maybe this was. Boy, time is really. I'm losing track of things. Are real.
Well, and it is the cocktail hour, so we've been working all day. So
yeah, it's that time. But a friend came in from out of town. A friend from China. We got together. Talked about old times. So yeah, there are a few people that I'm still in touch with, and it's amazing to see the directions that everyone has gone from that little era.
Yeah, it always is. Well, Andy, what, besides everyone leaving the office 50 something days ago, what other things changed in your world? In other words, I'm assuming there hasn't been a whole lot of travel.
That has been a real benefit. And you probably have felt this too. You know, conferences and speaking, client visits, sales. I have something like 15% more time now. And the question became what to do with that time. And sort of strangely, one of the anxieties is that I might be missing an opportunity, or am I making the most of this strange, you know, era that we're in? So that has been a big difference. And so content strategy-wise, separate from pivoting a little bit on the topics and doing some more sensitive pandemic era publishing, a little bit of research on the impact of coronavirus on agencies. But what to do with this extra time? I've pushed myself deeper into video and I started producing more content in that format. And have really, really enjoyed it. It's working well.
Now, you produce Content Jam in Chicago most years, and I read that that was canceled or delayed. When was that going to be?
Douglas, so stressful. It was these things you need to, at that scale, it's like a 500-person event. So you have to book them far in advance. Also, you want to book them far in advance because you want to try to get ticket sales to cover your costs as early as possible. It was going to be September 17th. That's still the window during which things are being canceled. There's a few things where I'm going to be in October where there's some optimism and they have not been canceled, or people are crossing their fingers and hoping that there will be some live events later in the year. So we weren't confident that there would be any ticket sales or that the speakers would be able to come. So it was like a really stressful thing to try to negotiate out of that contract.
Now, you say that was going to be in August?
Oh, no, September.
September.
Yeah, September. So just imagine this. I'll be transparent. Here are the real numbers. Downtown hotel, convention center, beautiful space, AV, food, all the whole contract. $65,000 commitment that we're in for, that was going to be the loss had we canceled and just eaten it right then. So rather than just accept that, we began a process of negotiation and offered them a lower settlement amount. And they were actually highly motivated to settle because all of our contacts there were being furloughed at the end of that week. So it was a $25,000 cost to get out of the contract, which we consider to be a win. Mm. Since then, I'd love to trade notes with you on this. I've been talking to speakers and presenters and organizers to learn about how virtual events can be done well, what a modern virtual event looks like. Is there a networking component? How is the Q&A handled? What is the programming like? And it's interesting. I think we're seeing a bit of innovation. And one of the things that I've heard is that unlike a live event, where if you want to ask a question, you kind of have to raise your hand and wait for someone to bring you a microphone, or God forbid, walk to the center aisle to stand in line.
Yeah.
Q&A is much better at virtual events because people are willing to throw out a question. So some of the most positive feedback I've seen from virtual events is when the presentation, let's say it's an hour or 45 minutes, the presenters commit to staying until every single question is answered.
Mm.
So there are sessions that are like 45-minute sessions with 90-minute Q&A.
Wow. You know, yesterday I was talking to Nick Webb, who's been a guest on the podcast a couple times. He wrote The Innovation Mandate and What Customers Crave, and he's a really successful keynote speaker, amongst other things. And he said something I hadn't heard before. He said, look, there's no such thing as a virtual keynote. There's keynotes, and then there's, you know, virtual events. But don't conflate the two. And what his point was, sort of what you're saying, like, do something different. Use that medium for what it's best suited. And, you know, there's a lot more that could be done for these types of things that we're learning, and some other authors I've spoken to have been experimenting with. It's not, you know, a webinar doesn't have to be presenting PowerPoint slides. There's a lot more interactivity. It's faster. It's more personal. So it's interesting. And today on the Marketing Week podcast, I published an interview with Nick Morgan, and he wrote a book called Can You Hear Me? Communicating in a Virtual World. And he has this one chapter on webinars, and basically he thinks there's a special place in hell for webinars. He just hates them because they've been so badly done. You know, I think that coming out of this, you know, thoughts like what you just said, there is a future for webinars, and people are going to realize they're going to be exposed to a lot, you know, better experiences. But it's really interesting to see what's going to happen, because it seems like it's going to be a while before a large number of people are going to get together. I mean, like even 500 people, that's pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
I have to ask though, did they offer you the notion of saying, you know, like, if you come back and do it within 2 years, you know, we'll do a deal with you?
They did. And technically, when you watch how people are doing events, you'll hear that, you know, if none of these things are canceled, they're just postponed until next year, which is their way of telegraphing to the potential attendee that they're not going away. It's their way of committing to the venues, sometimes legally, that they will be back. It's their way of telling sponsors, you know, please don't abandon us, you know, don't give up your whole budget. Don't, you know, forego this part of your marketing. So yeah, there is a, that is happening a lot. There's a lot of events that are telling sponsors that, No. We're just changing all the dates in the contract to be next year. Yes, yes, yes. You are still a sponsor of this event. Telling the venues, we're just taking this year off. We want all this, you know, and it's creating a little bit of certainty for the brands and the organizers and the venues. The economy can't really just pause itself for 6 months or a year, but I think that there is. When you look out that far, there's optimism that there will be some kind of new normal, which in a way, you know, misses the opportunity that you were just saying. It's like, what could be different? What could be better? Is there an opportunity here? I have been to networking events that are virtual that have been quite successful and where I've made connections. Weirdly, I went to attended a sort of a dance party a Saturday night. 4.5 hour Zoom dance party, which would be the equivalent in the event world of like an after party. That was actually quite fun. I think it's, you're missing a chance if you don't try to take this time to reimagine things and look for an opportunity.
Now, I haven't been invited to any dance parties, and I can't blame people for that. what happens at a virtual dance party?
This was Zoom. I'm going to try to describe it. There were probably 10 people there, 10 different, you know, Zoom accounts. Some of them were two different people in the same account. It was mostly dark. People, cameras were on. It was...
Did a lot of people know each other?
Yeah, they clearly were mostly friends, close friends. And the DJ had a hilarious, like, animated GIF behind him of some, you know, party light animation. And he was just playing music videos. He was sharing his screen, playing music videos, asking for requests. And some people would get up and dance, and some people were clearly just sitting in their bed. Some people were chatting. Everyone was muted until someone got excited about something and unmuted and shout out something to someone else. And everyone stayed on It was like, you could see the number of attendees, right? It was like 9 people. And 3 hours later, it was still 9 people. Right. It was just like people hanging out. It was just people hanging out. It was actually very cool. I have to say, I was glad that I went. And I mean, if you wanted to, you could get up and boogie, or most people were just sitting down most of the time. But it was really fun, just that it was just someone playing videos off of YouTube.
Yeah. And also, there's something about just that feeling of connectedness, like you're all kind of together, like you could go talk to each other or interact if you wanted to. It's like having the whole family over, you know, everybody's not always talking to each other. And sure, sometimes family members are arguing with one another, but you're right. All there, you know, you're all there. So
it was not the same, but it felt very social. It felt very social.
Cool. That's interesting. Well, Andy, you have put out the 5th edition of Content Chemistry, and which I interviewed you about, and you put that out after I interviewed you. And when my content director, Pete Humes, came to work at my agency, it was when he was first coming to the dark side. And when I mean coming to the dark side, he had been a business journalist. He was literally working for the newspaper, and then he came to work at my firm. And when I say dark side, I mean, you know, a marketing agency. Mm-hmm. Insert Darth Vader breathing here. That was one of the very first books I had him read, and it's still one of his favorites. And we've all left the office, just like your folks have done, and everything is empty. He took his computer, and actually, we're just going to let the lease go because otherwise these people will not work for me if they have to see me in the office again. No. That book was still sitting on his desk. So tell folks about Content Chemistry. I loved it because it was the first part was lecture, the second part was lab. Mm-hmm. And as an English major, I suffered through a year of chemistry. Mm. They also made us take a year of calculus. It was a very sadistic school. And this was the first time I enjoyed chemistry.
Was this Yale? Did you go to Yale? No, your wife went to Yale.
That's
who,
right.
Who went to Yale?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I went to a school, VMI, which has got a real engineering focus, even for the liberal arts people that they allow there. So tell folks about this content chemistry book, and how did you first come up with this idea?
Well, we both know Jay Baer. You know Jay?
Yeah, and he endorsed it.
On the show.
Yeah, he came on and he drank tequila, of course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So years ago, I wrote an article for Jay's website. Something, I think it was like, back then I used to try to write clever headlines. It was called Nice Blogs Finish Last. And it had a couple of simple theses in it. One of them was just that if you were more structured and had more forethought and were more organized, you could create content in a way that would eventually fit into a much larger piece. Sometimes call this big content now. In other words, everything that you might ever write, everything that you ever will write during your career is literally your LBO, they call it, lifetime body of work, your LBOW.
Oh.
Yeah. And if you are deliberate about it from the outset and go through the awesome intellectual exercise of outlining everything in your brain or everything you know on a subject matter, area of expertise or whatever, then as you go in about your normal job for the next few years of creating content, that you will eventually have produced the lion's share of what can then be repurposed into a big piece such as a book.
Mm-hmm.
So it was that. It was to sit down and first do the outline of everything in the brain on the topic, as if visually, like I think of all the topics in the universe as organized on a giant fractal. And you can kind of zoom in and zoom out, and there's sort of, you know, interesting things at different depths. So this was me planning in advance how all of these things fit together. The theory and the practices in lecture and lab, search, social, and email, from content strategy through execution. I'm kind of drawing like a matrix with my hand as I talk. And then at the end of that several years, I had basically created most of what this book would be. The next step was to get up at 4:30 every day for the next 3 or 4 months and work from 4:30 to 7 to fill in the blanks and polish and adapt and change the voice and the structure. And so it became a book. And I took it to Content Marketing World after having printed 10 copies at Kinko's and gave one to Anne Handley, one to Joe Polizzi, one to Mark Schaefer, and my heroes at the time, and still my heroes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, the people that brought us all together, really, in a lot of ways, as you mentioned, we met at those events. And it worked well as a leave behind in sales meetings. It led to conversations and PR and opportunities. And then when it went out of date, I had to update it and update it and update it. And so now it's probably due again. There's a few things that should be removed, and there's quite a few things that will be added in the sixth edition. Everything in there is still valid and relevant and useful. Some of it's timeless and what we, you know, what we call evergreen, like headline authoring, things like that. But yeah, it's used. I use it as a textbook when I teach. I teach a class at Northwestern every year. I teach a class for a startup university in Spain every year. A lot of teams use it as a training tool. A lot of people tell me they bought it because their boss made them, or people tell me that they read it and they bought it for everyone in their company.
Excellent.
So, it's a fun way to, if you enjoy that sort of challenge, big picture, like what is the Wikipedia of Douglas's brain, and just to outline it or do a post-it notes on a wall.
Yeah. That'll go on a thumb drive. No. Yeah, no, it's great. It was very ingenious. And, the periodic table of the, elements. And I can remember even after I interviewed you, there was like two other questions. After we were finished recording, I said, hey, I just got to ask this one quick question about domains or something. And you answered it for me. And just today, I was interviewing a guy named David Meerman Scott, who is the godfather of the Marketing Book Podcast. He was the first guest I ever had. And he's been on now 5 times. And today we were talking about the 7th edition of his book, the bestseller, New Rules of Marketing PR. And what was so interesting to me each time I read it is, what is he adding and what is he subtracting? And when you said that, there's some things that need to be updated and, edited, it's like, oh, I wonder what it is, because that's sort of like, the state of content marketing or something like that. When do you think a 6th edition would be out?
Well, I have it's in my hand now. So next to me, I keep a printed version. In the front, it says Andy's copy. And the table of contents is all marked up. And just the other day, I made a note. So I have new examples and better ways of explaining things like campaign tracking using UTM parameters. Nerdy analytics thing. That section will get another paragraph or two. I have a better way of discussing the content strategy aspect of whether or not to publish news. I mentioned evergreen, right? Like to news or not to news, right? The difference is between blogs that cover trends and news and those that don't. Is your blog a publication or is it a library? So that will be added. It's just deeper ways and deeper yet simpler ways to describe important things that have been refined by having, another 1,000 conversations with clients and friends and people like yourself. There are some things that are like whole, like new things, like my mini framework for promoting content using social media video. That's not in here at all yet. Mm-hmm. It needs to go in. And how to make a 1-minute commercial for your content using social media, which by the way is an amazing, it's super powerful tactic. My last social media video got as much traffic as our newsletter did. One social media post got as much traction as a newsletter. So these, it's the table of contents of this edition is just a whole bunch of notes about what will be refined probably later this year. The big cadence of our content is to do the blogger survey. Every year we get 1,000 bloggers to answer questions.
You're reading my notes here. I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. Tell us about the blogger survey.
Yeah, that has to get done before I can do the book, but that is a several month long project to get 1,000 bloggers to answer questions about how they work, promotion channels, what's effective, the length of their content, the amount of time they put into it, the promotion tactics they use, the formats they use. And this will be the 7th time we've done it. So I can show trends on increases and decreases in certain channels or formats or amount of time, all these things. So that is a major research piece that we do every year that requires like 100 hours of outreach.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much work. But it produces statistics that make us the primary source. It's a killer tactic. Be the primary source for a piece of data,
yes.
Soundbite. Yeah, it works yes. great.
And I feel bad that all I can do is, when I see that it's coming out, is I can try and share it on social media, like, everybody answer this survey, hurry up. So, you know, happy to play a small role there. Well, listen, Andy Crestodina, if there's any chance, there are only three books so far out of almost 300 that have been on the show for a subsequent edition. If there's any chance in the world that I could interview you about the sixth edition, please let me know when we can do it. And I'd love to help promote it. And I'd love to read the next one. And I know that the fifth edition, you had almost 100 pages more. Is that right?
Yeah, it got a lot bigger for the fifth edition. The problem is it gets too big to fit into a regular postal envelope. I don't know. I don't want to have to use a whole box to send this to people, but it is 272 pages. It's also the illustrated handbook. So it's totally scannable. It's filled with image, with screenshots and diagrams, but I'd be honored to fit anywhere into your content strategy.
Oh man, let me help. Now I just have to correct one thing, because I had 282 in my head and I looked it up on Amazon. It's 282. So don't sell yourself, Mr. Chris.
There we go. Good enough.
You're talking to a supporter right here. Okay.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Boy, that would be great. And we could talk about that. I would want to read it beforehand, obviously. Because there's so many things, even, that one, there's just one little thing on the side of one of the pages. It was the picture of the 3D map.
Mm-hmm.
Where you talked about building a certain body of expertise. And I'm not saying that right, but I just remember thinking I'd never seen that idea before. And I've since used it trying to help other people understand what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, that is it's a helpful way to, what do they call it? Like random, to avoid random acts of content. People that just kind of do a drive-by on a topic and publish one little thing and wonder why it didn't work.
Yeah, it's really quite definitive. And obviously, it's very, graphic. It's illustrated, not graphic, like violent. Unless maybe you had that in idea for the sixth edition. Maybe you could do an adult version or a video game version of it. I'm full of ideas that I don't have to implement. I should warn you.
The explicit lyrics version? Like to pull out the stops. That's a tactic, right? To drop some swear words. It's never been mine, but I'm not afraid to go there.
Yeah. I just don't think it's your brand. I'm sorry.
No, it's not.
So I just want to ask a couple other things. I read a book. It was on the show years ago called Do Good, about, you know, finding purpose and profit in a company, by Ann Barr Thompson. And that was the first time I learned about certified B corporations. And I was so excited preparing for this conversation to see that Orbit Media Studios is also one. Tell listeners what that is.
You are thorough in your homework. Rarely does anyone even notice that. To become a certified B corporation, you have to meet a certain level of standards where you are demonstrating commitment to social and environmental responsibility, sustainability, transparency, equity, for your team, compensation, across the board. There's a lot of different criteria. It's more than just like we recycle. It's a lot of little things.
Right. And there's only like how many, 100 or 200 in the state of Illinois?
I don't think there's enough. Yeah. It really has not yet taken off in the way that we would like for it to. I think there's a lot of B2C brands that are looking for some kind of social or like a certification. Patagonia, Ben & Jerry's, there's some big B Corps, but yeah, we were the I don't know, 15th or 17th in Illinois, something like that. And there's maybe 100 now.
Mm.
It's important. It matters to us. It matters a lot.
And just one last treat for the Marketing Book Podcast listeners, or more specifically, the Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails listeners. I noticed on your website that you all have these things called Wine and Webinar. Mm-hmm. And there's two coming up, two in June.
Was this
a warm-up for that? Or
It's surprisingly successful, right? The alcohol-themed conversation. This is actually the 10th year of Wine and Web, which was just our in-house teaching event. We've been doing this forever.
Oh.
Where open the big conference room, you know, 35 people at most can fit. It sells out. It sold out every year for many years.
And that wasn't 35 of your own employees, right?
No. Amazingly, I've had Ann Handley, when she, you know, you got to watch to see when people are in town and then invite them to come present.
Oh, wow. Ann Handley came?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Ginny Dietrich.
Well, she lives in Chicago, but she's a big deal.
Ginny's here, and she's the last Wine and Web of the year. I have a fireside chat with her every year. So COVID era, what are we going to do? Make it a webinar. Now we have like 200 or 300 people signing up. And we made it bi-weekly. We made it every other week. Can I ask you a question? When I say bi-weekly, how often does that sound like to you?
Fortnightly.
That's every 2 weeks.
Yes. Is that what you mean by bi-weekly? But I also have...
That is what I meant.
I know June 9th and June 23rd. Those kind of seemed like about 2 weeks apart.
Yeah.
It's bi-weekly. What do some people think that means?
I don't know. Twice a week? I think there's confusion. I'm not sure that there's agreement on the term.
And I don't think Americans use the term fortnightly anyway.
I love it though. I love that you said that. Yeah. Anyway, so we doubled up and literally in a single virtual event, we have had more attendance than in a year. I think there were almost 500 on one of them. There's opportunities in the COVID era. The reach has gone way, way up for that little event.
Interesting. Another author who was on the Marketing Group podcast, Louis Gadima, author of Bullseye Marketing. He lives in Boston, and he's currently the head of this group called the Sales and Marketing Innovators in Boston. And they always get together for breakfast like once a month. Mm. Well, they, just like you, they couldn't keep doing that. And they said, well, let's keep going until we can all get back together and let's do some webinars. And in a rare display of poor judgment, Louis has asked me to speak there in June. Talk about, you know, the 5 ideas from 275 books that matter most. So there's a little plug for that, but it's the closest thing I'm going to get to going to Boston. And it should be a lot of fun. And I think that the number of folks that are attending that are starting to uptick. And actually, that's probably, you know, even though you're going to go back to, I think you would want to go back to wine and web, mm-hmm. Just like the folks in Boston might want to go back to getting together for breakfast, which is definitely, I mean, we all want to get together. Mm-hmm. It's still going to be a shot in the arm for both events, theirs and yours, because more people are going to learn about it and they're going to mm-hmm. like it and form an association with it. And now you're going to have to find a bigger place.
Well, it may always have a virtual component. So if there's a, if we're all in a room, it'll be like, this is filmed in front of a live studio audience, but there'll be 35 people in a room, but there'll be 250 online. Douglas, anytime you would like to teach anything to our audience, you are welcome. Book you this summer or fall to present to our group at Wine and Web, I would be thrilled to have you.
Oh, well, thanks. I appreciate the invitation. Tell you what, I'll share with you what I ultimately am preparing for the folks in Boston, and you can see if that works. I will say, though, that I was just going to talk about Louis' book for 90 minutes, and he said, Douglas, no, that as much as I would appreciate that, don't do that. So I was going to say, yeah, I'll show up and talk about your book for 90 minutes. But again, that's kind of not how Andy Crestodina rolls anyway. So yeah, let's do it. But also, I'm dead serious about wanting you to come back on the Marketing Book Podcast to talk about that 6th edition. So let me know which of your people I need to talk to, and we'll figure that out.
I'll get right, and I'll set the alarm. I'll start. It's a pre-dawn effort. And
it has to happen after the next blogging survey, which is usually in the summer.
Yeah, that one, it's tough to do all these things at the same time. You know, you got to kind of pick your battles. Mm-hmm. That strategy, as you know, you're a strategist. You have, it's deciding what you don't do, what you're, you know, prioritization. So yeah, I think that we'll likely produce the survey first, and then I will get to work on the book, after which there is the production piece and the printing piece. It may not be till next spring.
Okay.
But it will happen. It has to happen. I can't let this It's too important to us to not have a current book. So, but I'm honored by that invitation. Thank you.
Well, your fans are calling for you. And all I can hope is that those Marketing Book Podcast listeners in over 150 countries really start putting the pressure on Andy to hurry up. So now you've got a support group.
You have a platform, 150 countries?
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's like 157 last time I looked, which That's is a while amazing. Back. Well, but there's still 190 or 200 countries, so I got some ways to go. And
your goal to be to get every single, maybe with a little outreach. Could we make that happen? Yeah. Which countries aren't on the list?
Well, North Korea is not on the list, but I know that guy listens.
That's a tough nut to crack. They're using VPN. They're coming in through Seoul. You know, they're probably dialing in through another network.
Oh yeah, yeah. Because I know if I got Dennis Rodman, a former Chicago Bulls player, on if he could just write a book, any book, or he may have already written some books, but it's like, you know, it doesn't have to be a marketing or sales book. I'll make that exception. Just come on, and then maybe we can get through to his buddy back in North Korea. Well, listen, Andy Crestodina, I really appreciate the opportunity to catch up with you. You've got to get home to Mrs. Crestodina and Eli and Ada. But I do appreciate you joining us here on Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. And I hope that you and your family and all the folks you work with and everybody in your world continues to stay well and optimistic.
Thank you from so many people that you share so much with, Douglas. Just keep doing what you're doing. You're a gem. You are one of the good ones. So I'm honored to be part of this and looking forward to more collaboration.
Absolutely. Thanks, Andy.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.